It's understandable that when you hand over your money to someone for safekeeping, you'd like to get it back. Hi, I'm Rob West, and that's the relationship you have with your bank. You put your money in with the expectation of it being there for you, plus interest. Is that a sure thing with online banks? I'll talk about that today, and we're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. So a few years ago, when online banks were first coming, well, online, we got a lot of calls from folks wondering if they were safe. Now, it seems we're getting that call volume again, with folks wondering if putting their money in an online bank is a prudent thing to do, possibly as a result of a few bank failures this past spring. Banking is perhaps the most heavily regulated industry in the U.S., but it isn't foolproof. Managers are human, and humans make mistakes. There will always be bank failures, but the system we have in place makes bank closures rare and isolated. Now, if you're concerned about putting money in a bank that has no branches, no actual buildings that you can physically walk into, you should know that there's actually very little difference between a so-called brick-and-mortar bank with branches and an online bank that exists only in cyberspace. In fact, to most customers of brick-and-mortar banks, there's no difference at all because they never go into a bank branch these days. That was a trend already well underway when COVID hit, forcing many banks to close branches to walk-in traffic. Since you can deposit a check with a smartphone now, many people have little need to actually go to a bank. Banks, of course, have noticed this, and they've been closing branches right and left the past few years. In 2020, there were about 90,000 brick-and-mortar bank branches in the U.S. By 2022, that number had fallen to just over 70,000. Banks need fewer branches these days because they're now offering all or most of their services online as well. Now, there's no doubt that some people want in-person banking, the ability to sit down with a loan officer face-to-face, for example. But it seems a lot more people are content to do their banking completely online, often with just a smartphone. But if folks can have that same cyber experience with a brick-and-mortar bank, why are so many people flocking to online banks and leaving brick-and-mortar behind? Well, it's simply a matter of interest. Online banks have significantly higher yielding rates and lower fees than traditional banks. That's because they don't have the overhead costs of maintaining dozens or even hundreds of brick-and-mortar branches. Still, to some people, the idea of not being able to physically go to a bank branch and take their money out is worrisome. Just how safe are online banks? Well, the answer is every bit as safe as brick-and-mortar banks and credit unions, as long as they're federally insured. That means they're backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, just in case a bank or credit union fails. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC, insures deposits at federally insured banks. The National Credit Union Administration insures deposits at federally insured credit unions. In both cases, that coverage is a maximum of $250,000 per person per institution. So an online bank has the same insurance coverage as a brick-and-mortar bank as long as it's FDIC insured. And you can check on that. Go to FDIC.gov and use their Bank Find feature, or visit NCUA.gov and use their Research a Credit Union tool to verify if an institution is federally insured. But you'll probably have a difficult time finding one that isn't. Now, what about cybersecurity, you ask? Well, if everything is done online, doesn't that make your account more vulnerable to hackers and thieves? Well, all banks, as well as online vendors, have a vested interest in preventing that. They use data encryption technologies such as two-factor or biometric authentication, electronic signature verification, and continuous account monitoring. But customers have to do their part to maintain cybersecurity too, and that's whether they use an online online or a brick-and-mortar bank. That starts with having a secure internet connection and a strong password. Never use public Wi-Fi to access any of your accounts, either financing or shopping. That person sitting next to you in the coffee shop could be waiting for a chance to hack into your account and clean you out. So to recap the question, are online banks safe? The answer, as long as they're federally insured, they're every bit as safe as brick and mortar. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Jesus once described himself and all his people as a beautiful tree that's being faithfully pruned by his Father. The branches are Christians, and the branches that bear fruit get pruned to bear more fruit. It's painful at times, as all pruning is, but it's ultimately for the good of bearing more fruit. Why go through all this trouble? Jesus in John 15, "You've not chosen me, I have chosen you so that you might go and bear fruit and that your fruit should remain." He wants an orchard of beautiful fruit-bearing trees, and he's faithfully working to make sure that happens. In Christ, our fruit blossoms and ripens for the world to taste. Spend more time with Jesus. Visit getanchor.com.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience, and she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries' biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
Jenna Ellis in the morning.
You need to be very concerned about what your children are being exposed to if they go to a public school or even if they go to a Christian school. Parents are not just allowed, they have a constitutionally protected fundamental right that is God-given to direct the education, well-being, and faith options of their children.
Jenna Ellis in the morning, weekdays at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from LitePoint Portfolios, which seeks out family and faith-friendly investments for 401k and 403b plans, integrating faith values and fiduciary duty. LitePoint Portfolios offers retirement plans for a variety of organizations, such as businesses, nonprofits, and churches. And we're grateful for their sponsorship of the Faith and Finance Program. More information is available at LitePointPortfolios.com.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Thanks for joining us on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Phone lines aren't open today since this is a recorded program, but we have some great questions we think you will find helpful. Let's begin today in South Carolina. We'll welcome Mac to the broadcast. Go right ahead, sir.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for your call.
All right. I got a quick question. I'm just getting started with my finances. So I have a job now, and I need some advice on starting a 401k or getting an IRA. I don't really know which direction to go.
Okay.
And like what percentage of my paycheck should I be investing? And yeah. Then the second part would be like insurance, term life or whole life.
Great, Mac. Yeah, I'd be happy to weigh in on those. You know, I love that you're just getting started here and thinking about the priority use of God's money. I think the first idea we need to grab hold of is that God owns it all. We're stewards, and the Bible really is our source for how we should think about money as a tool to accomplish God's purposes. I would challenge you to give first, because that's going to break the grip of money over your life. And I love the idea of you being a systematic giver. Beyond that, I'd love for you to have some margin. You know, Proverbs Proverbs talks about the wisdom of having a bit beyond what we need today. It says there's precious treasure and oil in the house of the wise. The foolish man swallows it up. So we want to have some margin both in our spending plan with regard to not spending every dime that comes in, having something left over, but also some cushion set up in savings. I call that an emergency fund, and we typically recommend you have 3 to 6 months expenses. So as long as you've got that emergency fund well on your way to 3 to 6 months expenses, you're living within your means on a balanced budget, you're giving systematically, and you don't have any high interest debt, then I think it's a great idea to start saving for the future, because investing in a 401k or an IRA, anytime you're investing systematically the same amount every month on a regular rhythm, like every paycheck, that's called dollar cost averaging. It's a powerful tool when it comes to our investments, because it allows us to buy in at different points in the market, whether the market is up or down. We're investing a consistent amount. When the market's down, we're getting more shares of whatever investments we're putting our money into, because they're kind of on sale. And then as they recover, we benefit from that because we own more shares. But we're systematically investing over time, which takes the emotional buying and selling out of it. And it just has us, you know, investing on a disciplined basis. I love that you asked about the percentage to invest. I would set a goal to, at a minimum, start by taking full advantage of any matching you have in that 401k. So I like the Roth IRA, but I'd start with the 401k up to the matching portion. And then I'd go to the Roth IRA and I'd fully max out that for this year, which would be $6,500 if you're under age 50 and you're, if you're married, your spouse could have a Roth IRA as well, working or not, as a spousal IRA. So you could put away a full $13,000 under age 50 between two Roths. And then I'd go back to the 401k for any additional investing you want to do once you hit that ceiling. In terms of a total percentage allocation, we like to say 10 to 15% of your take-home pay is a good starting point. It's a pretty good rule of thumb. That doesn't replace some real retirement planning where you'd actually sit with a professional who looks at your lifestyle spending, looks at your ultimate savings goal, and helps you determine, you know, a real target for your retirement savings every month that's ultimately going to lead to you accomplishing that goal. But apart from that more in-depth retirement planning, I like you investing 10 to 15%. But if you're just getting started and you can't do that, let's at least fully max out that matching portion. I know you asked about life insurance. We'll get to that in a moment, but give me any questions or thoughts you have on that first part.
Well, I think what I've balanced out so far is I was looking at about $500 per pay to put into the 401k.
Okay.
To maybe make up for some lost time and, you know, try to get ahead.
Yeah.
My overall monthly bills or expenditure is about $2,000 to $2,500.
Okay.
So I have some room, and yeah. I own everything. I outright own my home and all my vehicles. So I really got the biggest thing. My wife have a credit card, about $10,000. And I know you mentioned something before about Christian Credit Counselor.
That's right. Yeah, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. If you've got a balance higher than 4,000, certainly, you know, 10,000 is there. I like using a debt management program to pay that off. It's going to keep the debt right where it is. We're not talking about taking out a new loan to pay it off. It's going to get the interest rates down because, you know, through credit counseling, they offer lower interest rates, and you'll send one level monthly payment. But through that level payment plus the reduction in the interest rate, you should pay that off on average 80% faster. I would, if you have the, do you have any matching in that 401k?
Yes. And I'm going to find out some more information from my employer. But yes, I think we have matching.
Okay. So I'd take advantage of that, but I'd only do up to the match because that's free money. At that point, you're better off focusing on paying off that credit card debt as soon as you can before you'd put more into your 401k. I love you being a systematic, you know, contributor to that 401k, but with that credit card interest, you know, even in a credit counseling program, it's going to be somewhere between probably 8 and 5%. So I'd love to see you get out of that as soon as possible. And then once that's paid off, then let's start bumping up that retirement contribution, you know, to whatever you can do. This year, a 401k would allow you to put away $22,500. So that will allow you to put in, you know, quite a bit of money this year toward that. But I'd love for you to get rid of that credit card debt first.
Okay.
All right.
Credit card debt will be the target.
Yeah, and ChristianCreditCounselors.org can help you. Do you have an emergency fund already, Mac?
I do. I've been tapping in it to purchase some things I necessarily don't need.
Okay. All right.
But I do have a small reserve fund, okay. About $5,000.
Okay. Well, let's work on getting that up. You know, with your bills at $2,500, you've got a couple of months. Love to get that to $7,500. I'd also love for that to be in a separate savings account, maybe an online bank that's earning some interest, but where it's not in your primary checking account, because I really don't want you spending that on non-budgeted items. That really should be reserved for the unexpected, so you guys can break the cycle of you know, using those credit cards and, you know, really never go back there again. And that fully funded emergency fund is key for that. With regard to the insurance, the life insurance, I like term insurance. So that's pure insurance where you're just paying, you know, the mortality expense, the actual expense of what it takes for them to insure your life. I'd get it for 20 or 30 years and make sure you get enough of it. So at a minimum, you need 10 to 12 times the income you're trying to replace, if in fact this is for income replacement. So if your wife's relying on your income, you know, and you're making, you know, $100,000 a year, you need $1 million to $1.2 million, just kind of in round numbers. And then you could add to that the ability to pay off the house. That would be on top of that. You could go beyond that and add a child's college or complete eradication of your debt. But at a minimum, you need 10 to 12 times your income. The most cost-effective way to do that is through term insurance. At some point, you'll renew it for another 20 or 30 years. And then when you get to retirement, you got all the savings and investments you need. So you drop it and then you save outside of the life insurance. Hope that gets you going in the right direction, Mac. Mac, stay on the line. I want to send you a copy of Ron Blue's book, Master Your Money. It'll be our gift to you. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Matt Ayers, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Do you want to be prepared for ministry at an institution that you can trust? Wesley Biblical Seminary has been training trusted leaders for faithful churches for almost 50 years. In a nation where many denominations and theological institutions are caving to cultural pressure, Wesley Biblical Seminary is standing strong on God's truth. Earn your bachelor's or master's degree to equip you for faithful and fruitful ministry. Learn more at wbs.edu.
We're grateful for support from Guidestone, whose diversified suite of investment solutions align with Christian values to create positive change in the world. More information is available at GuidestoneFunds.com. Investing involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Guidestone Funds before investing. They're distributed by Foresight Funds Distributors, LLC, which is not an advisory affiliate, a registered investment advisor, nor do they provide investment advice.
The loss of a child through an abortion affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming, but there is hope and healing in the aftermath. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Rob West of Faith and Finance.
If you've listened any length of time, you're aware that we often underscore the importance of preparing for the future. Well, as you look into the future, I suggest you consider the AFA Foundation in your estate planning. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
Delighted to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. What are you thinking about financially? Let's talk about it together. Whether it's living, giving, owing, or growing, we'd love to help you tackle it and apply God's wisdom to the decisions and choices you're making today. That's right. Timeless principles and passages that apply to today's financial decisions. That's what we do on this program. Let's head to Columbia, Missouri. Hi, Jerry. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Good afternoon. You know, I'll start off by saying I don't make a lot of money. And I actually got a settlement check, so I made some money the hard way by getting hurt in a car accident.
Okay.
So, but now that I have this, so the question is, what do I do with a chunk of it? I've got $15,000 that I need to take care of debt-wise, and the rest, which would be around 30 thereabouts, what do I do with that? What's the best place to put that?
Yeah. Well, Jerry, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear that you were in an accident. How are you doing health-wise?
Actually, I'm doing well. I've come a long ways, and so considering how badly I was hurt, I'm doing pretty well, and glory to God.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm delighted to hear that. Jerry, I think, you know, the first thing we always want to think about, and I like the fact that you're going to pay off some consumer debt. Let me ask, are you living on a balanced budget? I know you said you don't, you know, have a lot of money, but are you able to cover your bills and maybe have a little bit left over in a typical month?
Oh, check to check with me, because I've tried to help out my family, and that has kind of taking me into the negative and destroyed my credit rating. And that's something else I hope I can take care of here.
Yeah. Were you a co-signer on some loans?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Yeah. So let me, and you probably have, sounds like you've learned this the hard way, but let me just encourage you not to do that. You know, the Bible offers principles around managing money. This one, though, is pretty much a directive. I mean, it's very clear. Do not co-sign. And the reason is it can put you in a position where it damages relationships. You know, anytime we're a borrower and a lender, it's a master-slave relationship is the way the Bible describes it. And we know the fallout of that is financial, but it certainly can also be relational. The Federal Trade Commission tells us about 50% of the time when we sign on the dotted line for somebody else who can't qualify on a note without us co-signing, we're going to have to step in and pay it off. And if we don't have the ability to do so because we're obligated equally with them, it'll damage our credit and there will be fallout to that. And despite your desire to help your family, which I love and I think that's God honoring, you've got to do it in the context of a well thought out financial plan where you're not putting yourself in harm's way financially just because you have a desire to help. And, you know, family members, and I'm not saying that happened here, but they can take advantage of your generous heart if you're not careful. So I think we've got to, everything has to be built on a plan that makes sense. And if God's given you the desire and the gift of giving, that's great, but let's build it into that plan. Now, I'm not saying we remove the Holy Spirit from everything. We need to have some flexibility and freedom to follow his leading, but I don't believe he would lead you into debt in order to help your family. So let's kind of order your finances in such a way where you've got a category for giving, but it's in light of everything else. And I think that's where you've got to start, is really going back to that budget, that spending plan, Jerry, to make sure that everything balances, that you have a good handle on your income, and then you have a good handle on your expenses, not only fixed expenses, the things you get a bill in the mail for, but your discretionary spending, those things that come up, like the desire to give to somebody in need, or clothing, or eating out, those things that, you know, truly are discretionary and can quickly be the budget busters. Having a plan for all of that makes sense. And we can't live right up to the edge. We got to have a little bit of margin. So what I'm going to suggest to you, in addition to working on that budget, is that you take the balance of this and use it to shore up your emergency fund. Now, that doesn't mean it becomes the miscellaneous category that just takes all of the lifestyle spending beyond what you have available every month. I want you to build a budget that balances without touching this money so that it can truly be for the unexpected. Because if you've got $15,000 in consumer debt and you're going to end up with about $35,000 in emergency fund, that really should be for something that comes out of left field. Now, if you can demonstrate to yourself that you can live on that balanced budget and not touch this, ultimately you'd want to have 3 to 6 months expenses, and that $35,000 may exceed 3 to 6 months expenses. That's okay. If you determine that, you know what, I can live without this and not touch it, and I think I've got a little bit more than I need, well, now we're starting to think about maybe carving off a portion of it into a car replacement fund so you can buy the next car with cash. Maybe you're going to take it and, you know, accelerate some of your long-term retirement savings through a 401k or funding an IRA. But I'd like for you to hang on to it for now, until you really can live on that balanced budget, you know, for a period of time without having to touch it and without incurring any new debt. Give me your thoughts on all of that, though. I threw a lot at you there.
Well, my bank mentioned the CDs, and I've heard about an I-bond, and I know there are various routes to go as far as putting this somewhere and letting it sit.
Yeah.
That's the big thought.
Yeah, I don't like I-bonds right here, just because, you know, the rate is down such that, you're not going to get a whole lot on it. So they were very attractive a year or so ago. They're now down to 4.3%, and that would only last 6 months. And I think when the new rate comes out, it changes every 6 months in November, it's going to be even lower. So you can get 4% right now on a high-yield savings account and have complete access to that money. Now, if you wanted to take maybe $10,000 or $15,000 of it, what you would consider to be beyond your emergency fund, and try to get a little bit more, you could get 5.5% for a year or so, and you could find the best CDs at bankrate.com. But for the rest of it, I'd put it in a high-yield savings account, and you should be able to get at least 4% on that with FDIC insurance and no fees. And I'd rather it be in a separate savings account anyway, so it doesn't get mixed up in your checking account and get spent on just monthly lifestyle spending. Find the best CDs and savings accounts at bankrate.com. Jerry, God bless you. Thanks for your call. More to come on Faith and Finance right after this. We'll be right back.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Hannah's Heart, a half-hour program specifically designed to encourage Christian couples walking through infertility and miscarriage.
This is not a show that's going to promise you a certain outcome, mm-hmm. but this is a show that says however God answers your cry, we know that He's enough.
Hannah's Heart with Ann Cockrell and Kendra White each Saturday afternoon at 5 Central on American Family Radio. You can find the podcast at afr.net.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
God's Word is packed with life-changing wisdom about your finances. And FaithFi is here to help you and many others to be wise stewards of God's resources. As a nonprofit organization, we rely on help from FaithFi patrons, supporters of this mission, to help us continue and expand our outreach. Please consider becoming a monthly FaithFi patron. Visit faithfi.com and click Give on the homepage.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Hey, great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Let's dive in. I'm ready to go. Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Kathy. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about I have $20,000 to invest in, and yeah. I have my emergency fund, and I'm looking to build some interest. What would you suggest would be a good way to do that?
I just put it all in Tesla and call it a day, Kathy. No, I'm just kidding,
call
Kathy. Don't do that. Don't do that.
And
tell me where this money fits in kind of your overall financial picture. I appreciate that you have your emergency fund. Is this money you just want to try to grow for the future, but you're looking 5 years, maybe even 10 years plus?
Yeah, 5 to 10 years, I'd say. Yeah.
Okay. So I think now.
Right away.
Yeah, so that makes it a candidate to invest. I wouldn't put it all in one stock, despite what I said a moment ago. I would properly diversify it. So I think you've got a couple of options. You could use an actively managed fund, mutual fund, which is just a basket of stocks. If you wanted to use a faith-based investing fund option, you could go to our website, faithfi.com. Just click on the show, and you'd see some great mutual fund companies like Inspire, and you'd see their Guidestone. And you'd find Crossmark Global and Eventide and some great fund families that you can invest in. And those would be aligned with your values as a believer. A second option would be just to buy an index ETF. So ETF stands for Exchange Traded Fund. And these indexes are just the broad market indexes. And I'd probably use one of the robo-advisors, and that just means it's an automated investing solution that would build a portfolio after you answer a series of questions. So they'd want to know your age and your risk tolerance and how long the time horizon is and what the purpose of the money is and all those things. And then it would use indexes to start building a portfolio for you. The benefit is it's turnkey. If you wanted to add more money to it, it's very easy to do. It's very low cost. The annual cost might be a quarter of 1% a year. And you're just going to capture the broad moves of the stock and bond market. You're going to not try to pick the winners and losers. If you wanted to do that, I would go to probably Charles Schwab and use their Schwab Intelligent portfolios. And then maybe a third option would be visit with our friends at soundmindinvesting.org, and they could help you find a good mutual fund, more of an actively managed type mutual fund that would be a great solution for you. So I think any one of those three would be good. They're all going to be widely diversified, different approaches. One's faith-based investing, one's a robo-advisor with indexes, and one's actively managed mutual funds. But it would give you at least three options to choose from. Is that helpful?
It is very helpful. Appreciate the advice. Okay.
Yeah, so check those out, faithfi.com. Click on the show. You can find those faith-based investing fund families. You can go to the Schwab Intelligent Portfolios and read up, and then you could go to soundmindinvesting.org. I'd also love to send you a copy of the Sound Mind Investing Handbook, Kathy. I think it might be just helpful reading as you begin to familiarize yourself with investing. So you stay on the line. We'll get your information, and we'll send that out to you. It's our way of saying thanks for being on the show today. Let's head to Wheaton, Illinois. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my question.
Of course.
I'm in the opposite situation of your previous caller. I've got about $20,000 worth of debt spread through about six or seven loan sources.
Okay.
And I'm considering, I've been listening to the ads for Trinity Debt Consolidation, so I've been considering doing that. However, the lease on my car is due come January, so it's time to turn it in and get a new car. I'm a single mom on full-time disability, and I don't want to ding my credit by having the consolidation process possibly, you know, close cards or close things and make them look like I'm afraid that that will affect negatively my credit.
Yeah.
Can you help me understand how the consolidation
I'd be happy
works?
To, Michelle. Yeah, sure can. So with regard to debt management, not debt consolidation where you take out a new loan, but debt management or credit counseling, we happen to recommend Christian Credit Counselors. It's just the one we work with here at Faith and Finance Live. You mentioned Trinity. I have nothing bad to say about that organization at all. I've just never worked with them. A lot of our listeners have used Christian Credit Counselors. Either one, I think, would probably be a great option for you. But the idea behind debt management, which is my preferred way for you to get out from under this credit card debt, is that the accounts will be closed. They're placed in a debt management program. The idea is you get a lower interest rate. You send a level monthly payment through the credit counseling agency, which should help you get out of debt on average 80% faster. So that's all good. How does that affect your credit score? Well, it doesn't directly affect your credit score. The fact that you're in debt management is not a part of the credit scoring algorithm. So it will not affect your score one bit. Now, where will it affect you? Well, a couple of ways. Number one is often the credit company will put a notation on your credit report, like literally a printed notation that you're in a debt management program. And that comment would be available to a lender who was running a credit check. Again, it won't directly impact your score, but they could see that and decide what to do with that information. That may or may not affect you. Again, the score is the primary thing. Now, how could your score directly be impacted? Well, you mentioned probably the only way, and that is that any accounts that go into debt management are closed. So when they're closed, that reduces your available credit, which affects your credit utilization. So you could see a minor dip in your credit score, just depending on the impact of the closing. That is not, I mean, what I'm much more concerned in is the fact that you get out of debt once and for all, and I love debt management to do that. I'm also glad to hear it's August, and this is probably not until the first quarter of next year. So I think any, you know, temporary dip will have recovered by then. And keep in mind, through debt management, you're going to be paying off these cards faster. So those balances are going to be dropping much quicker on debt management, which I think will put you in a position to pay it off quicker and have very minimal, if any, impact to your credit score. Now, if you're right there on the bubble between the top tier credit where you'd get a better interest rate and the next level down, you know, could it result in you still having a score a few points lower come next January? Possibly. I wouldn't expect that to be the case. But I think my primary concern is you getting out of debt. But give me your thoughts on all that.
Well, while it all sounds good, hearing that they're going to close the lines of credit, that was my concern. is that I have had my credit cards closed in the past, and that that has negatively impacted my ability to get a loan. And occasionally, because of my circumstances, I have needed loans to get me through.
Yeah. Well, it may be different, though. This would be the same as you calling a credit card that you're no longer using and just say, close it. It's not like the creditor's closing it for non-payment. This is as if you're closing it when you go into the debt management program. So it's a very minimal impact. Really, the only impact you're going to see as a result of that being closed is related to credit utilization. It's not the closing itself is not a negative thing. It's not like you failed to pay and the lender came in and closed the line down, which may have been what happened to you in the past. But it is absolutely going to be closed, any accounts that you put in, and you don't have to put them all in. So what may be a good next step is just to reach out to ChristianCreditCounselors.org and talk through it with them. But at the end of the day, if you decide it's not, you know, worth it because of a potential impact to the credit score, then I would pass. We'll be right back. Thanks for calling.
Sandy Rios 24/7. It's not a morning show. It's an all-day show, fueled by the wit and wisdom of Sandy Rios.
If you have a smartphone, I think you should download the AFR app.
Sandy Rios 24/7 is on the podcast page at AFR.net.
I have, you know, so many listeners from the radio show who are now listening to the podcast.
Sandy Rios 24/7.
You live my prayers all the time.
Sandy Rios 24/7 on the podcast page at AFR.net.
I love AFR. You say it's on the radio, too?
Here at American Family Radio, we know that many people find their audio entertainment in other places than the radio. So our programming is available with the AFR app on Apple and Android devices, through Amazon Alexa, and now available on Roku.
I just love the podcasts.
That, too. American Family Radio, streaming or podcast, now available wherever you are. And we're on the radio.
Have you downloaded the Faith Fi app yet? You need to do that today, because this is going to make your life easier. Yes, you can manage your money through the in-app envelope feature, but also plan out future goals. I want to buy a house in 5 years, and I'm on track to do that. Here's also what I like. You can connect with people around the country. It's like social media, but better. Ask a question, get an answer, and share what you're learning about money and investing. So why don't you grab your phone right now and download the Faith Fi app?
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at EventideInvestments.com. That's EventideInvestments.com.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Here in our final segment today, let me remind you once again, we're away from the studio, so don't call in, but we lined up some great questions. We'll get to those in just a moment. First, let's take an email. These come into us at askrob@faithfi.com. We always enjoy receiving them. This one comes from a curious parent. Anonymous writes, "What kind of credit card would be good for a 14-year-old? One that money can be put on and there is a limit. Is there any reputable company that offers one?" Well, let me just say, first of all, thanks for writing. You must be 18 to get a credit card in your own name. And that's true even for a secured credit card. This is because the credit card agreement is a legal contract. However, you can make a child an authorized user on your credit card as early as age 13. This would help the youngster build a credit history, but it won't teach responsibility because you'll be managing the card. Many banks, however, will allow a child to get a debit card as young as 13 to use with either a joint checking account that's also in your name or it could be with a custodial account in the child's name. The child will manage the account and would give them a great opportunity with your supervision to learn responsibility. You could go to bankrate.com and search for the bank programs that are the best right now. We happen to use the Capital One Money account with our kids right now, but there's a lot of great ones out there. But I think the key is a debit card is the way to go. Now, use this as an opportunity to help them develop a spending plan, understand that money is limited and it needs to be used among the save, grow, and give categories. We also want to take it as an opportunity to teach the biblical basis for handling money, starting with the idea that God owns it all and recognizing that we're stewards or money managers for the Lord's resources. But this can be a great opportunity for you to do some instruction and set them up for success as they prepare to be future adults managing their own money. So thank you for writing to us. By the way, if you have a question, you'd like us to read it on the air, send it along to askrob@faithfi.com. We'd love to tackle it. Back to the phones to Ohio we go. Hi, Katie. Go right ahead.
Hello. Thank you, Rob, for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm a student, former student, and I have about $50,000 in student debt. And then, of course, the Supreme Court struck down the provision for having some student loan forgiveness.
That's
and I
right.
just wanted to see, like, I do have, you know, IRAs. I've got an emergency fund of 6 months or more. I've got, you know, we have savings in that. But I just wanted to see if you, because I get contacted a lot by different organizations kind of trying to offer me, like, lower interest rates and stuff. But some of them I think are a scam, and I'm just not quite sure that I can really discern that. And if you had any advice for how to, like, start, you know, because it'll start back up in October.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Well, first of all, there are a lot of scams out there right now. And in fact, the Federal Trade Commission is just out with some warnings to student loan borrowers to be on the lookout for scam artists following especially this new Supreme Court decision. You don't want to trust anyone who promises debt relief or loan forgiveness. You don't ever want to give away your federal student aid ID login information and never pay for help with your student loans. Are these federal loans, Katie, or private?
Yeah. No, they're federal. They're the federal.
Okay.
And like, so when COVID first began, at that time, it was President Trump just held everything in forbearance.
Right.
And I called and talked to customer service at Student Loan at that time, and they had said that during this time that it would be as if we were making the 120 payments we have to make with like 0% interest. And then when that forbearance period was over, then we'd pick it up from there.
Yeah. So are you trying to get the loan forgiveness from the public sector?
Well, I was trying to get it, but as I said, the Supreme Court struck that down, and I did get an email because they are trying to do some things to make it easier for people to start coming back and paying their student loans.
Okay. The public service loan forgiveness is still available. So if you work in public service, federal, state, local, for a government or nonprofit organization for 10 years or more, even if not consecutive, you may be eligible to have all of that canceled. So that public service loan forgiveness program wasn't affected here by the decision to not allow the Biden forgiveness to go into effect. It's a completely separate program that continues. And so I would, you know, still look into that again, if you qualify, and you need to make sure that you do. Beyond that, I think that I wouldn't be looking to refinance this outside of the federal loan program. I mean, you probably are going to have a higher interest rate. You'd also most certainly lose all of the benefits that come through the federal loan program with regard to income-based repayment. I'm not saying you need those now, but if you did, that's a nice option to have where you could step down that payment based on your income if you all had a disruption in income or went through a difficult season. So I'd leave it right where it is. And apart from just confirming whether or not you qualify for the PSLF, I would just focus on getting back on that scheduled monthly payment, trying to pay extra. I realize it's a big number, but, you know, let's just try to get that paid off. And that comes by living on less than you make, freeing up margin, and trying to prepay that loan.
Right, right. Well, and I am in public student loan forgiveness, but my understanding is, you know, if you make those 120 consistent payments and you're not late, they will forgive the rest. So
that's right.
It wouldn't necessarily behoove me to put extra on the loan.
That's
you know,
right.
At this job.
Well, that's exactly right. If you're in the public service loan forgiveness and you're certain you qualify, and you would want to just make those 10 years of on-time scheduled payments, 120 of them, and the rest will be forgiven. And so you're right. If you do qualify and you are in that type of work, then absolutely, I would say don't prepay it.
Yeah, I was just hoping for, like, you know, some other option for me, but
sure.
I kind of figured that's what it would be. So,
yeah.
But thank you for taking the call. That's
You're welcome,
helpful.
Katie. Absolutely. Thanks for your call today. God bless you. Let's head to Michigan. Hi, Gail. Go right ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. I listen to you quite a bit, and I hear you say that annuities are not a good idea, and that is what we have for our IRAs. And I think we've had them about 7 years. And so I am wondering what you recommend for people like us. We are a retirement age. We are not yet retired. But do we make a change at this point?
Yeah, I wouldn't say automatically, Gail. I mean, I'm not one who says there's never a place for annuities. They're just not my favorite tool to save over time because you give up access to your money, you know, you have certain limitations on what you can get to, at least, you know, during the early years of that, they tend to be complicated. They limit your upside potential. And so I'd rather you have insurance where you need insurance and then you save outside of that and get the full upside, even though you're taking some risk. Now, the benefit of the annuity is you've got that ability to convert that to a guaranteed income stream where you give up, you know, you transfer the risk to the insurance company. So are you looking to annuitize this at some point and turn it in to an income stream that would be a part of your retirement plan? Is that what you all were thinking?
Well, we are at the age where my husband is already taking out money. And I just wanted to know, it just makes me nervous to hear you say that annuities are not a good investment, and
yeah.
That is what we have.
Right.
And before we went to this, then we were also in not a very good program. So I'm...
Okay.
You know, I'm just...
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to be anxious about it. It's not a terrible thing at all. It's just that, you know, for those who are trying to build wealth over time, I prefer you build wealth outside of an insurance product and just straight investments. But now that you're here, you've built up, you know, a nest egg inside an annuity, I think it would behoove you to, you know, sit with an advisor who can look at, from an objective perspective, look at the insurance product you have, and then in light of your overall financial plan and your, you know, plan for retirement income, whether that's Social Security and, you know, drawing down this annuity or convert or what's called annuitizing it, where you convert it to an income stream that gets paid out in the form of a monthly check for the rest of your life or the rest of you and your spouse's, life. You know, it may make sense for you all now that you've got it and you're approaching retirement to stay right where you are and, you know, convert that to an annuitized payment. And the key is, how are you going to solve for the income that you need for the rest of your life? And this annuity could be a great piece of that equation. Now, you may sit with an advisor that says, listen, we can roll this out if it's, you know, qualified money, when in pre-tax. We can roll this out to an IRA and invest it and maybe do better, you know, at least just based on what we would know about how this annuity is going to, you know, perform for you versus what you might be able to do outside of it. But I wouldn't say that's automatically the best case. I would just want an advisor to look at that and help you make that decision in light of your overall retirement plan. Do you have an advisor that you've worked with besides just the person who sold you the annuity?
Well, we do have an account in Schwab as well.
Okay.
And we did try putting annuity money or IRA money into that for a while. And then went back to our investor of the annuity. But otherwise, no, we don't.
Okay. Well, I would say if you have a great relationship and you feel good about that, I'd, you know, go visit with that advisor that you got the annuity from, just to say, hey, let's talk about, kind of, unless you already know this, let's talk about the retirement plan. How much, you know, are we going to need per month in retirement? And where is that going to come from? And how much will this annuity contribute to that? You know, and then what other income sources do we have? Social Security, maybe the IRA, other retirement assets. I'm not saying, Gail, you automatically need to get out of this annuity. Now that you're there, it may be the best option for you moving forward, but it would be worth a look.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. We appreciate your call today. That's going to do it for us today, folks. Thanks to my team, Devin Patrick, Pat Montague, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here as well. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and come back and join us tomorrow. Lord willing, I'll be here, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.